This episode is brought to you by Fast Enterprises. Fast helps motor vehicle agencies serve the public by delivering enterprise modernization projects on time and on budget every time. Improve customer service and be ready for whatever the future brings. Give Fast a call at 1-877-ASK-FAST or visit us on the web at fastenterprises.com. Welcome to AnvaCast, bringing news, information, and expertise to the Anva community. Here's your host, Ian Grossman. Enjoy the show.
Hello, everyone. Welcome back to the AnvaCast. This week, we are taking a look at an upcoming publication that our Anva members have worked on to help their peers and colleagues throughout North America. More specifically, we're going to talk about a new publication titled The Third-Party Agent Administration Best Practices. And what is that? That is all about how best to manage the relationships and the unique working scenarios of working with third-party agents doing business on behalf of a jurisdiction. To join us for the conversation this week, I am pleased to welcome Steve Murphy from Service Alberta. Steve is the Director of Registries, Administration, and Accountability in Alberta and served as a member of the working group. I'm also pleased to welcome Casey Garber, who is AMVA's Manager of Vehicle Programs, who served as the Project Manager for the working group. Steve, Casey, welcome to both of your first appearances on the AMVACast.
Thank you, Ian.
Thanks, Ian.
Casey, let me start with you to give us some background before the working group was even established. This conversation originated in a conversation with the Vehicle Standing Committee, who are the ones who first recommended AMVA take a look at this area. Take me back to that conversation in terms of what was the pain point, what was the challenge that our jurisdiction members through the Vehicle Standing Committee identified that said, can we tackle this type of best practice?
Sure. So what we were hearing from the Vehicle Standing Committee was that they had these relationships established with third-party agents who were processing motor vehicle and driver license transactions on their behalf. And when they would find that they were not maybe performing quite to the expectation level that they had wanted them to, or that they were making errors, or they wanted to take some kind of action to maybe require them to have more training or make corrections whenever they were making mistakes, they didn't really have anything that would support that. So they might not have had the ability to go in and do an audit and make sure that they were doing things the way they needed to, or if they had someone who just really wasn't performing to the level that they needed to perform at, they weren't able to take any action or terminate that relationship with them because, you know, they didn't really have any formal agreements or contracts in place that laid out all of the, we as a jurisdiction are required for this, and you as a third-party agent are required for these things. And so, you know, they said, you know, what is it that we can do so that when we find that we have an agent who's doing really, really well or doing poorly, we can go in and take the appropriate action.
Great. So, Steve, when the group first gets together, Casey talked about, and I talked about, this phrase third-party agents, and Casey talked about doing vehicle and driver licensing transactions, but that phrase third-party agents can sound somewhat nebulous and somewhat, you know, where does that start and stop? So how did the working group manage really refining that scope to defining what really qualifies as a third-party agent in the context of the working group's activity?
And that was exactly an issue that we wrestled with at first, just really trying to draw a box around what does that mean? You know, in Alberta, third-party agents, they deliver a wide range of services, not just motor vehicle-related services. So we really tried to define what that meant to everyone, and we benefited from having a good cross-section of folks from different areas, jurisdictions that had third-party agents, jurisdictions that were looking to implement third-party agents. So really, we looked at getting everyone's ideas and feedback and what a third-party agent meant to them, and really tried to draw a box around it that would be descriptive enough that it would be kind of relevant to anyone who picked up the best practice.
And so tell me, Casey, maybe we'll start with you. When we talk about this third-party agent, give me an example of more specifically what that looks like in the context for an AMVA member. When they're thinking about a third-party agent, they're thinking about a county doing work on their behalf, a kiosk in a grocery store. I mean, talk to me. Let's unpack that third-party agent definition just a little bit more.
Sure. That was a big part of the discussion for the working group. We looked at, you know, what the different models were across the AMVA community, and there were several. And so sometimes, like you mentioned, it might be a county, it might be a local municipality or an elected official who has that responsibility as a third-party agent to perform part of those transactions on behalf of the motor vehicle agency. That might be laid out by statute. In other circumstances, they were private parties, so they might have put it out for bid. It might have went out on a contract. They might have done RFPs for them. And then there were other situations where the third-party agent might have been someone who's providing the system. So an entity who provides maybe like a dealer management system. And so the state might have their relationship with, you know, the vendor who's providing the software to the dealers who are then performing that transaction, or the jurisdiction might have the contract directly with the dealer, and then the dealer could, you know, subcontract with whichever software provider they wanted, or it might be a local municipality or elected official. And so there were definitely multiple models of how those relationships were formed between the jurisdictions. And so one of the big things that the working group talked about was, if you're in a jurisdiction who doesn't have a third-party agent program, but you are considering implementing one, you should really, you know, do an assessment of what model best fits for you. That might be where you only have an agreement and contract with a vendor or software provider, or it might be an agreement where you have a contract and agreement with both the vendor software provider and the actual agent who's doing the work. So there were multiple models, multiple models that were all successful. And so one of the recommendations that came out of the document was to really take a look at those different models, maybe have some conversations with other jurisdictions who are using the model that you think might best fit your jurisdiction, and then look at the pros and cons of doing it under those different models.
And when you're looking at those models, when you think about it from the transaction perspective, is there any transaction that somebody somewhere isn't doing with a third party? When I think about transaction, I think about the driver licensing function, vehicle registration, vehicle titling. Did you find in your scanning of the jurisdictions that somebody somewhere is using a third party for virtually everything in some place?
We did a chart that's in the appendix of which jurisdictions were using a third party for which services. For the most part, most jurisdictions do not have all of that outsourced in the U.S. Steve can probably talk a little better about how that's done in some of the Canadian provinces. I think they use third-party agents a little more broadly than it's done in the United States. But for the most part, it wasn't every part of the transaction. There was usually some piece that was still handled by the jurisdiction.
Sure. Steve, did you notice dramatic differences between the way, generally speaking, our Canadian members approach this from the US members? Were there trends there, or was it really just jurisdiction dependent?
Yeah, I think we just very much saw that it was jurisdiction dependent. Each jurisdiction seemed to do things maybe slightly differently. There were certainly a lot of similarities, and we tried to draw on those similarities and use that as kind of a starting point. And really, at the end of the day, we wanted to a guide that whether it was someone who had a third party that was looking to expand it, they were looking to bolster their auditing or their performance management, or a jurisdiction that was just looking to get into utilizing third party agents and was kind of starting from scratch. We really wanted to structure the document so that it would kind of suit everyone's needs.
So let's talk a little bit more about if you're going to do that. Casey gave the example of if you're considering engaging a third party, the document has some different models and an ability to talk to jurisdictions that are using different models so that you can decide what to do. You gave some other examples in there about auditing and contracting. What are the tools that members will find in the document that will help them in some of those different areas?
Well, we very much tried to kind of highlight the most important areas that we felt a jurisdiction needed to consider. So whether that was kind of a quality assurance program, doing background checks, kind of elements of the contract. And we tried to break it down and highlight exactly why these sections were important and why jurisdictions should kind of give these some thought and kind of plan this out. So we really wanted to identify kind of, here's why. So here's the things to consider, but here's why you should consider them. And we kind of approached it in that manner so that, a jurisdiction could pick up the document, they could read it, and they could go, oh, okay, I understand why I should give this area some thought.
And are there particular areas that the group found more challenging than others to figure out the universal tool that might help everybody?
Well, I mean, again, using quality assurance as an example, each jurisdiction may do it slightly differently. Certain jurisdictions may require a third party to implement their own quality assurance program. Other jurisdictions may, do that quality assurance on their own using their own resources. The contract as an example, obviously each jurisdiction has different legislation, different laws, so they have to structure the contract the way that is going to fit within their jurisdiction. But we again tried to highlight certain sections that they wanted to have. So again, it's a starting point, and they could then build upon it based on their own unique situations.
Now, in a recent episode, we talked to some of your counterparts that worked on the data privacy and protection best practice. And I know that there was some coordination and alignment between this exercise and that exercise. Casey, talk to me a bit about where the two have some corollaries and, where there may even be overlap between managing the third party and managing data privacy.
Yeah, so we thought it was really important that, we knew the Managing Data Privacy group was meeting at the same time, and we co-located so that we could have some conversations with both of the working groups so that, we wouldn't have any contradicting recommendations and, we could lean on them and their expertise where we needed that. I think it's really important when you think about third-party agents who are doing business on your behalf is that it is still your data. And so protecting that data is incredibly important. And for a citizen who's walking in to title their vehicle, renew their license plate, get their driver's license, they may not necessarily realize they're dealing with a third-party agent, not dealing directly with the jurisdiction. And so how that transaction goes, how well they are served while they're with that third-party agent is still going to be a reflection on the jurisdiction. And so we felt it was really important to make sure that, you know, the contract and the MOU and the expectations that are laid out for a third-party agent are going to require them to have the same levels of security to protect data that the jurisdictions have, because ultimately the jurisdictions are responsible or can be responsible for protecting that data. And so there were, you know, instances where we were talking about, you know, protecting that data, and then we would refer over to the managing data privacy document because they might have had more detail in what data elements and how. And so we didn't want to be completely silent on it because it's still a really big issue. But at the same time, we wanted to make sure that they're aware that there's another document out there that goes into maybe a deeper dive of how you should go about protecting that information.
And in terms of those requirements that they might want to have in their relationship with a third party, will the best practice document provide templates, model agreements, a checklist of what they're going to want to have in those agreements with the third parties?
In the document we did, as part of the contract portion, we did include recommendations of different terms of the contract that we think you should include. In many cases, that might be handled by, you know, your procurement officers or whoever does the contracts for your jurisdiction. And so we talked about, you know, the things of different elements that needed to be in the contract. And then we also talked about performance expectations. And so, you know, we thought about the contract being, you know, the initial agreement that you have that maybe is done by the procurement office that might be a little more high level. And then those performance expectations are going to be a little more granular and are going to say, you know, you have to be performing at, you know, this rate with no errors. And you have to do X, Y, and Z. And so we did put specific things in there that we thought were really important. It's not a comprehensive list that covers everything. You know, we looked at the different contracts and agreements that jurisdictions were using. There are some jurisdictions out there that have some really great comprehensive contracts and agreements. Steve, for example, they have a really great one that covers so many different pieces. But every jurisdiction is really going to have to mold those contracts and the agreements to their processes and how things are handled in their jurisdiction. But we wanted to hit on the main, really important pieces that would best support the jurisdictions if they did need to take action or maybe decide that a third-party agent was not performing and they wanted to end that relationship. Mm-hmm. Or, you know, maybe they see that, hey, they're doing something really, really well, and it would highlight those things as well. So we did try to provide specifics, but also know that it's not going to be a direct template that you can just, you know, pull out and plug your information into either.
Steve, Casey mentioned something a little while ago around this idea that the end customer may not even know this is a third-party agent. Certainly, if you go to a dealer and you're buying a new vehicle and that dealer takes care of getting the vehicle registered for you and gives you the plates and all that, obviously, you know you're not dealing with the government agency. But there are other times where maybe it's a little bit less clear. Is that something that had some any more conversation in the working group around to what degree should a government agency require these third parties to be clear and disclose that they're not a government agency and they actually are a third party? Or is it, you know, more in the interest to make it a more of a seamless transaction and it's, you know, it's not as necessary to make sure the customer knows that?
Yeah, definitely that was something that that came up. And again, we discussed it and tried to analyze kind of what other jurisdictions were doing today. At the end of the day, I mean, I think the citizen, you know, they just want to get the service that they need. They want to ensure that it kind of meets all their requirements. But, you know, one of the ways that we looked at that, and again, going back to the kind of contract considerations is, you know, embedding some of those type of requirements in the contract so that mm-hmm. a third party has to kind of disclose or as part of their advertising that they identify that they're an authorized kind of third party or they're an authorized agent and that there's some controls around what type of government logos they can use and how they can kind of brand themselves. So again, it enables the jurisdiction to have some kind of control over exactly how these third parties are going out and engaging citizens and ensuring that the citizen is well aware that you know, this is a third party, it's an approved third party, mm-hmm. but that the, you know, service is meets government standards.
And what about unapproved third parties? Is that a challenge that we see out there amongst the jurisdictions?
Again, I mean, as kind of, I think Casey mentioned earlier, I mean, there's a wide range of jurisdictions that have a number of kind of third parties. Now, whether or not a system integrator is considered a third party, some of that we found kind of goes back to each jurisdiction and kind of how sure. they kind of categorize. But, you know, we, and there's some other kind of concierge services that are offering kind of almost delivery services. So these are kind of things that we did kind of look at. But at the end of the day, we kind of excluded some of those kind of delivery type services as, you know, they're not officially third parties. So right. we kind of excluded them from our analysis and the best practice that we developed.
But they're also not necessarily acting inappropriately or in a fraud sense. It's just not, they're not in that scope of the formal contracted third party delivery.
Exactly that, you know, some of them are kind of almost adding or offering value added services to the consumer. And I mean, right. like anything these days, you know, consumers are always kind of encouraged to be well aware of kind of the website they're on or the service that they're procuring to make sure that it is kind of an approved service.
So you both of you went into this exercise not knowing what to find in these working group conversations. What were some of the bigger surprises that evolved organically as the working group was discussing the topic that maybe you didn't expect to learn or know what was going on or realize that so many people were dealing with? What was, Steve, for you in the conversations with the working group, what was your biggest surprise, aha moment in the journey?
Well, I mean, I think for starters, it was a great experience, and we had a great cross section of folks from different areas. So, you know, it was kind of eye opening to hear jurisdictions that were on the working group that were just in their infancy in terms of leveraging third party. So they obviously had a very different perspective than, you know, myself from Alberta that have been using third parties for almost 3 years, and kind of Arizona that, you know, again, heavily utilizes third party. So for me, kind of an aha moment was just kind of looking at third parties, leveraging third parties, but from different lenses, from the lens of someone who's looking to set up a new program or someone who's just looking for tips to bolster their current program. So it was just kind of really good to hear other jurisdictions' perspective and just the questions that they posed and how they kind of viewed everything.
And I guess, and recognizing that the different levels of maturity and experience of having worked in this space really does vary quite widely across the jurisdictions.
Very much so. And again, you know, I think Amva did a great job just in the composition of the working group, because we had folks from different areas, different jurisdictions. So I think we had a really good cross section and we're able to kind of look at things from a wide variety of lenses.
Casey, what was your big surprise?
One of the jurisdictions had brought up that, you know, they were requiring third party agents to meet these expectations of very few errors, and then they had to go back and say, are we holding ourselves to that same standard? And in some cases they were not, and so then they had to reevaluate, you know, what they were holding their own internal staff expectations to. And they made adjustments to that so that there wasn't an inconsistency there. They weren't expecting the third-party agent to perform at a higher standard than what they were even expecting out of their own staff. And that really wasn't something that I had considered going in to this project. But when it got brought up, I thought, oh, that's actually really, really great. Because, you know, when you contract something out, you don't want someone making errors. But it's not really fair to hold them at a different standard than what you're doing your own staff. And so, you know, that was probably the biggest surprise to me. And then also, maybe some of the limitations that the jurisdictions have whenever it is local government or an elected official who has to process part of the transaction. In some cases, you know, they really have their hands tied on some things because it's in statute and they don't really have a lot of flexibility to make changes that might otherwise be really great process improvement changes for them.
So what else about the document haven't we talked about that you want to make sure members are aware of, that it's coming, it's covered in the document, and this might be a specific part to look out for when you get it in your hands? Anything we haven't talked on that either one of you want to highlight?
I think I would certainly highlight the fact, and you know, certainly for jurisdictions that are looking to maybe get into the business of leveraging third parties, that there's a lot of work involved in kind of managing the third parties, whether it be from contract administration to quality assurance programs. So, you know, while there's efficiencies and potentially cost savings to be had with utilizing third parties, there is still going to be a fair amount of work on the jurisdiction just with respect to ongoing management of that relationship and ongoing auditing and quality assurance and contract administration. So there's still certainly going to be a chunk of work that the jurisdiction will need to continue to do.
Casey, anything for you?
I would say one thing that we just really haven't touched on is the fraud side. And so all the different ways that you can try to detect and deter fraud. We have a chapter on fraud and fraud deterrence, and that when you are going to implement something, or maybe you have an existing system and you know you read this document and then decide, oh hey, well I want to modify my program based on some of these recommendations. One of the things that we recommended was, you know, putting some tools within your system that's going to automatically look for inconsistencies, and some data analytical tools that might bring forward some anomalies that you might not otherwise catch. And I think that's a good thing to think about in terms of how you're doing your programming, and maybe what thresholds you're going to put in there for when you might need to take a little closer look at something, just so that you can support that on the fraud side as well. And then, you know, like Steve mentioned, it's still going to be work, but we also have a section that talks about making sure that you're consistent in your compliance. And so whenever you need to take action, that you're taking consistent action regardless of which third party it is. And I think that's really important as well, so that you have that kind of standard in place where, you know, if it's a certain kind of corrective measure that needs to be taken, you have something in place where you handle poor performance in a very standard way. you're always going to have to take each individual situation on its own merit, but at the same time, it's good to have a standard in place so that you can be consistent in how you're handling those corrective actions.
Excellent. Well, I want to thank both of you for taking some time to chat with me and for our listeners to hear about this best practice that will soon be published. It'll be available, of course, on the AMVA website and announced in the Week in Review when it's available. So thank you both. Appreciate it. For our listeners, be on the lookout. Third-party agents administration best practice coming your way soon. So I want to thank Steve and Casey for joining us. I want to thank our producer, Claire Jeffrey, and we'll see you all the next time on the AmvaCast. Stay well, everyone.
Thank you for joining us for AmvaCast, hosted by Ian Grossman, produced by Claire Jeffrey, music by Gibson Arthur.
This episode was brought to you by Fast Enterprises.
Visit us at amvacast.podbean.com and subscribe on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Stitcher, and Spotify.